I mean,
some of the scenes you will witness may appear to border on fantasy.
I can game it in a big way.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Gracious. But,
I mean, tonight,
we care, and it shows.
The law.
You will listen and obey.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Monarchy. This is the first episode and actually my first time behind the mic, so you may have to bear with me here while I'm in the studio. I want to thank Jeff and everybody who probably doesn't know me here at PRA. Really glad they gave me the shot to do this. I pitched the idea to do a news show, cinema blog, and they were excited, and I'm excited to be here and to be able to do this for you. Maybe a little bit about myself. My name's James. Like I said, the show is Media Monarchy. I'm basically going to be using my news webpage as my script for this show every week, Friday mornings at 10 o'clock. And you can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com, and you can find all the news that we're going to cover here right there for you. A little bit of background. I moved to Portland just under a year ago. I think my one-year anniversary will be coming up here in about a week or so. So I'm excited to be here and be on the air. Moved here from a little town in West Virginia called Shepherdstown, and for over 5 years, and I actually worked there for 10 years, I helped run a non-commercial radio station there in Shepherdstown. 950 watts, it was the radio station under Shepherd University, and I was the music director there and a DJ and programmer and just all-around instructor, cheerleader, workhorse. I'm really glad that I'm here doing this for you, and I hope that you're going to be interested and receptive to what we're going to be going over. It's not about left, and it's not about right. There is a conspiracy to take away our rights. And it's not about George Bush. It's not about Bill Clinton. It's not about Hillary Clinton. They're all working for the same gang. It's not as simple as voting in the Democrats next week, because they ain't going to help you. It's just two management teams fighting for position of Slavery Incorporated. Now, we'll go ahead and jump into it. I got a lot of stuff, a lot of news, a lot of clips, a lot of interviews, a lot of things to hit up. Top story, what's on the webpage right now? More allegations from EPA whistleblower. And this story's coming from rawstory.com. An Environmental Protection Agency whistleblower who has long argued that her agency failed to issue proper warnings about air quality at the World Trade Center disaster site has leveled new accusations against the agency, Raw Story has learned. As Raw Story reported this past August, Kate Jenkins, an EPA biochemist, sent a letter to New York congressional delegation alleging that the inconsistent official reports about inhalant alkalinity were part of an intentional cover-up by government scientists and officials. Jenkins' latest 60-page document, and you can link to it here on Media Monarchy, Jenkins' latest 60-page document addressed to the acting inspector general of the EPA is in large part a compilation of her previous allegations, but also claims to offer new evidence that criminal fraud is to blame. In the latest report, Jenkins contends that by failing to report that some of the particulates in the air constituted a severe health hazard, and by suppressing the results of tests for the presence of other toxic chemicals, the EPA misled the public about the dire health consequences of remaining near Ground Zero or participating in the cleanup effort in the days following the attack. Tens of thousands of cases of lung disease have reportedly resulted from exposure to the smoke and pulverized debris that hovered in the vicinity of the disaster site for months after the towers collapsed. Earlier this year, federal judge Deborah Batts ruled that then EPA director Christine Todd Whitman had misled residents and rescuers when she pronounced that the air quality in Lower Manhattan met public safety standards and necessitated neither a surgical mask nor a respirator. You notice how everybody else is in their hazmat gear, but oh no, it's okay, just go on down and up. John Manabusan, spokesman for the Office of the Inspector General, told Raw Story that he had not yet received the complaint, but added, Jenkins has issued a number of complaints to our office about the World Trade Center and other things. We always take a look at them. In some cases, we issue a response. How long that takes depends on a lot of factors. Manabusan directed Raw Story to a 2004 official response to earlier Jenkins allegations of a conflict of interest in the peer review of EPA's assessment of Ground Zero health hazards. That investigation found that though the EPA's contractor did not inquire whether the three panelists had received funding from industry or had publicly expressed viewpoints on the issues to be reviewed, they, quote, did not find that the panel's input was biased, or that any of the panelists should have been excluded from participating. And again, you can hit Kate Jenkins' full, I believe, 60-page PDF memorandum off of MediaMonarchy.blogspot.com.
It won't let the
Our next story is a disturbing one coming from the BBC. German troops in skull photos controversy. Photos apparently showing German troops posing with a skull in Afghanistan have caused outrage in Germany. The tabloid newspaper Bild, which carried the photos, said they show German troops in Afghanistan in 2003. On one of the pictures, a soldier is seen holding the skull next to his exposed penis. On another, soldiers pose with a skull on their Jeep. Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel expressed disgust at the photos and said there would be full investigation. Two possible suspects have already been identified and are being questioned, said Army Chief of Staff General Wolfgang Schneiderhahn. One of the suspects was still with the armed forces and the other had left the army, the general said. We all saw pictures today that are shocking, that are repugnant, and that can be excused by nothing, Chancellor Merkel said. The government will investigate the soldiers who played a role and act with full severity, she added. German Defense Minister Franz Josef Jung, pledged, quote, disciplinary or even criminal measures for those involved if the story was confirmed. Anyone who behaves this way has no place in the Bundeswehr, the German military, he added. The story was given wide coverage on German television on Wednesday. We can't use such people in our army, Bernhard Goertz, head of their main organization representing German troops, said on ARD television channel. We must investigate exactly how such degeneration and misbehavior can happen despite good training and good supervision. The Bild newspaper did not say how it had obtained the photographs, nor gave any proof of their authenticity. It is not clear where the skull in the pictures came from, the newspaper admitted, adding that according to a military source, it could have been taken from a mass grave. Germany has about 2,800 troops stationed in Afghanistan within NATO's International Security Assistance Force, the ISAF. Unlike British, American, and Canadian troops who are fighting the Taliban in the south and helping that opium keep a-coming, the Germans are based in the relative calm of the capital, Kabul, and in the north of the country. Last month, the Bundestag, the lower house of the German parliament, voted to extend the mission of the German forces in Afghanistan until October next year because of the worsening security situation there.
Gotta have you on my world, 'cause I want your love.
James. You're listening to the first installment of Media Monarchy here on PRA, the Portland Radio Authority, here in the People's Republic of Oregon. You can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com for all the news and things that you're going to hear on this show every Friday at 10 a.m. Our next story on Media Monarchy is called CIA's Travel Agent. And this story is coming from The New Yorker. On the official website of Boeing, the world's largest aerospace company, there is a section devoted to a subsidiary called Jeppesen International Trip Planning, based in San Jose, California. The write-up mentions that the division offers everything needed for efficient, hassle-free international flight operations, spanning the globe from Aachen to Zhangzhou. The paragraph concludes, Jeppesen has done it all. Boeing does not mention, either on its website or in its annual report, that Jeppesen's clients include the CIA, and that among the international trips that the company plans for the agency are secret, extraordinary rendition flights for terrorism suspects. Most of the planes in rendition flights are owned and operated by tiny charter airlines that function as CIA front companies. But it is not widely known that the agency has turned to a division of Boeing, the publicly traded blue-chip behemoth, to handle many of the logistical and navigational details for these trips, including flight plans, clearance to fly over other countries, hotel reservations, and ground crew arrangements. The Bush administration has defended the clandestine rendition program, which began during the Clinton years, as an effective method of transporting terrorists to countries where they can be questioned or held. Human rights activists and others have said the program's primary intent is to send suspects to detention centers where they can be interrogated harshly, and have criticized it as an illegal means of outsourcing torture. Twist with Torture Day. My name's James, and you're listening to the first installment of Media Monarchy here on the Portland Radio Authority. You can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com for all the news and information and tons and tons and tons more. All the things that we're going to be covering on this show every Friday at 10, starting today. Our next story centers a little closer to home. Oregon group to screen 9/11 documentary. And this one's coming from the Mail Tribune. Ken Becker is a bright, educated, and progressive fellow who normally scoffs at conspiracy theories. But the talent resident isn't scoffing at those who believe the truth has yet to be told about the September 11th, 2001 attack on the World Trade Center in New York City and the Pentagon in D.C. Becker, 52, is the founder of 9/11 Truth Now, an independent grassroots group demanding an independent criminal investigation into 9/11. And you can hit up their website at 911truthnow.org. Ken Becker says, "I'm open-minded, but I'm also skeptical. I'm not a conspiracy theorist," said the married father of two. "I have a family. I have my own business. I'm an Eagle Scout." But 9/11 raised so many questions that have never been answered by our government, he added. "I don't know what happened, but I do know we need to find out." The group is sponsoring the Oregon premiere of 9/11, The Myth and the Reality, a documentary film that will be shown Saturday evening, tomorrow night, in the Performing Arts Center at Crater High School in Central Point, Oregon. Now, if you go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com, you can watch the entire documentary, 9/11, The Myth and the Reality, featuring Dr. David Ray Griffin. Jumping on to our next story, here's the guy, Keith Olbermann. The story's called Olbermann on GOP Fear-Mongering. Amazingly enough, Keith Olbermann on MSNBC is knocking it out of the freaking park every night on his show Countdown on MSNBC. Now, it's kind of amazing, you know, a lot of people say, "Wow, man, he's got a lot of guts, I can't believe he's doing that." And then the other question is, how is he able to get away with what he's doing? Now, we were talking at the top of the show that it's not about left and right, it's not about conservative or liberal or Republican or Democrat, because ultimately, it's all the same damn thing. They're all funded by the same people, and even if we vote in the Democrats, there's still going to be more war, more torture, more surveillance, more the loss of our rights. My take on the Keith Olbermann explosion is what G. Edward Griffin kind of referred to as pressure from above, pressure from below, and that when the forces of control, when things go too much in one direction, you need to kind of let off a little bit of steam. So I kind of believe Olbermann's able to get away with this because it does let him kind of release some of the pressure. Because the Bush, you know, even now, many conservatives, as well as all kinds of other people, are realizing that this regime is going too far, and a lot of people are being disgusted by it. So I think Olbermann acts as a kind of a pressure valve that's kind of getting out there and kind of lets you think that, okay, we're kind of swinging back in the other way. I don't know if that's entirely true. However, it is amazing that he's being able to get away with what he's doing on the air every night on Countdown on MSNBC. So our next story, Olbermann on GOP fear-mongering. I get this from crooksandliars.com. Keith issued arguably his most powerful special comment. This time he takes on the GOP's newest fear-mongering ad, which quotes Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zahari superimposed over pictures of explosions with the sound of a ticking bomb in the background. And if that wasn't enough, it's topped off with the cryptic message echoing LBJ's 1964 Daisy ad that ran just once. "These are the stakes." In my opinion, and now I'm reading from Crooks and Liars, "In my opinion, the most important point Keith makes concerns the recent uproar over the video CNN showed this week of a sniper attack on U.S. troops in Iraq. House Armed Services Chairman Duncan Hunter and Congressman Brian Bilbray have come out strong against it, calling it a terrorist snuff film. Yet they seem to have no problem with an RNC ad, which is really nothing short of a terrorist propaganda film itself." Now, what I have for you right now is Keith Olbermann's entire special comment on GOP fear-mongering.
And lastly tonight, a special comment on the advertising of terrorism, the commercial you have already seen. It is a distillation of everything this administration and the party in power have tried to do these last 5 years and 6 weeks. It is from the Republican National Committee. It shows images of Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri. It offers quotes from them, all as a clock ticks ominously in the background. It concludes with what Zawahiri may or may not have said to a Pakistani journalist as long ago as 2001. His dubious claim that he had purchased suitcase bombs. The quotation is followed by sheer coincidence, no doubt, by an image of a massive explosion. These are the stakes, appears on the screen, quoting exactly from Lyndon Johnson's infamous nuclear scare commercial from 1964. Vote November 7th. There is a cheap Texas chainsaw massacre quality to the whole thing. It also serves to immediately call to mind the occasions when President Bush dismissed Osama bin Laden as somebody he didn't think about, except, obviously, when elections were near. Frankly, a lot of people seeing that commercial for the first time have laughed out loud. But not everyone. And therein lies the true threat to this country. The dictionary definition of the word terrorize is simple and not open to misinterpretation. To fill or overpower with terror, terrify, to coerce by intimidation or fear. Note, please, that the words violence and death are missing from that definition. For the key to terror, the key to terrorism, is not the act, but the fear of the act. That is why bin Laden and his deputies and his imitators are forever putting together videotaped statements and releasing virtual infomercials with dire threats and heart-stopping warnings. But why is the Republican Party imitating them? Bin Laden puts out what amounts to a commercial of fear. The Republicans put out what is unmistakable as a commercial of fear. The Republicans are paying to have the messages of bin Laden and the others broadcast into your home. Only the Republicans have a bigger bankroll. When last week the CNN network ran video of an insurgent in Iraq evidently stalking and killing an American soldier, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Mr. Hunter, Republican of California, branded that channel, quote, the publicist for an enemy propaganda film, and added that CNN used it to sell commercials. Another California Republican, Representative Brian Bilbray, called the video, quote, nothing short of a terrorist snuff film. If so, Mr. Bilbray, then what in the hell is your party's new advertisement? And Mr. Hunter, CNN using the video to sell commercials? Commercials! You have adopted bin Laden and Zawahiri as spokesman for the Republican National Committee. To fill or overpower with terror, terrify, to coerce by intimidation or fear. By this definition, the people who put these videos together, first the terrorists, and then the administration, whose shared goal is to scare you into panicking instead of thinking. They are the ones terrorizing you. By this definition, the leading terrorist group in this world right now is Al-Qaeda, but the leading terrorist group in this country right now is the Republican Party. 11 presidents ago, a chief executive reassured us that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. His distant successor has wasted his administration, insisting that there is nothing we can have but fear itself. The vice president, as recently as this month, was caught campaigning again with the phrase, mass death in the United States. 4 years ago, it was the now Secretary of State, Dr. Rice, rationalizing Iraq with, quote, we don't want to be the smoking gun to be the mushroom cloud. Days later, Mr. Bush himself told an audience that, quote, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud. And now we have this cheesy commercial, complete with images of a faked mushroom cloud and implications of mass death in America. This administration has derived benefit and power from terrorizing the very people it claims to be protecting from terror. It may be the oldest trick in the political book, scare people into believing they are in danger and that only you can save them. Lyndon Johnson used it to bury Barry Goldwater. Joe McCarthy leaked from obscurity on its back. And now the legacy has come to President George W. Bush. Of course, the gruel of fear is getting thinner and thinner, is it not, Mr. President? And thus more and more of it needs to be made out of less and less actual terror. After last week's embarrassing internet hoax about dirty bombs at football stadium, the one your Department of Homeland Security immediately disseminated to the public, a self-described former CIA operative named Wayne Simmons cited the fiasco as, quote, the perfect example of the President's Military Commissions Act of 2006 and the NSA terrorist eavesdropping program, how vital they are. Frank Gaffney, once a respected Assistant Secretary of Defense and now the president of something called the Center for Security Policy, added, "One of the things that I hope Americans take away from this is not only that they're gunning for us, not just in a place like Iraq, but truly worldwide." Of course, the they to which Mr. Gaffney referred turned out to be a lone 20-year-old grocery bagger from Wisconsin named Jake, a kid trying to one-up some other loser in an internet game of chicken. His threat referenced 7 football stadiums at which dirty bombs were to be exploded yesterday. It began with the one in New York City, even though there isn't one in New York City. And though the attacks were supposed to be simultaneous, 4 of the games were scheduled to start at 1 p.m. Eastern Time and the others at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Moreover, the kid said he had posted the identical message on 40 websites since September. We caught him in merely about 6 weeks. Even though the only way he could have been less subtle, less stealthy, and less of a threat was if he bought an advertisement on the Super Bowl telecast. Mr. Bush, this is the what, 100th plot your people have revealed that turned out to be some nonsensical misunderstanding or the fabrications of somebody hoping to talk his way off a waterboard in Eastern Europe? If, Mr. President, this is the kind of crack work that your new ad implies that only you, and not the Democrats, you, sir, need to pull over and ask for directions. The real question, of course, Mr. Bush, is why did your Department of Homeland Security even release that information in the first place? It was never a serious threat. Even the first news accounts quoted a Homeland spokesman as admitting strong skepticism, the kind of strong skepticism which most government agencies address before telling the public, not afterwards. So that leaves 2 options, Mr. President. The first option, you and your Department of Homeland Security don't have the slightest idea what you're doing here. Thus, contrary to your flip-flopping between saying, we're safe, and saying, well, we're not safe enough, and contrary to the Vice President's swaggering pronouncements about the lack of another attack since 9/11, the last 5 years has been just an accident. Or there's the second option. Your political operatives leaked this nonsense for the same reason your political operatives put out that commercial, to scare the gullible. Obviously, the correct answer, Mr. Bush, is all of the above. There are some of us who could forgive you for trying to run your candidates on the coattails of the Grim Reaper, for reducing your party's existence to death and attacks us. It's cynical and barbaric, but after all, it may be merely the natural extension of the gutter politics to which you have subscribed since you sidled over from baseball and the business world of other people's money. But to forgive you for terrorizing us, we would have to believe you somehow competent in keeping others from terrorizing us. Yet last week, construction workers repairing a subway line in New York City were cleaning out an abandoned manhole on the edge of the World Trade Center site when they stumbled on the horrific and the impossible. Human remains from 9/11. Bones and fragments. 80 of them. Some as much as a foot long. The victims had been lying, literally in the gutter, for 5 years and 5 weeks. The families and friends of each of the 2,749 dead, who had been grimly told in May 2002 that there were no more remains to be found, were struck anew as if the terrorism of that day had just happened all over again. And over this weekend, they have found still more remains. And now this week will be spent looking in places that should have already been looked at 1,000 times 5 years ago. For all the victims in New York, Mr. Bush, the living and the dead, it is a touch of 9/11 all over again.
Michael.
And the mayor of this city, who called off the search 4.5 years ago, is a Republican. The governor of this state with whom he conferred is a Republican. The House of Representatives, Republican. The Senate, Republican. The President, Republican. And yet you can actually claim that you and you alone can protect us from terrorism? You can't even recover our dead from the battlefield. The battlefield in an American city, when we've given you 5 years and unlimited funds to do so. Well, citing a Military Commissions Act so monstrous that it has now been criticized by even the John Birch Society, you told us, Mr. Bush, quote, "There is nothing we can do to bring back the men and women lost on September 11, 2001, yet we'll always honor their memory, and we will never forget the way they were taken from us." Except, of course, for the ones who have been lying under a manhole cover for 5 years. Setting aside the fact that your government has done nothing else for those 5 years but pat itself on the back about terror while waging pointless war on the wrong enemy in Iraq and waging war on the cherished freedoms in America, just on this subject of counterterrorism, sir, yours is the least competent government in time of crisis in this country's history. These are the stakes, indeed, Mr. President. You do not know what you are doing. And the commercial, the one about which Zawahiri might say, hey, pretty good, we love your choice of font style. All that further needs to be said about that is to add three words to Shakespeare. Mr. President, you and that advertisement of terror are full of sound and fury, signifying and competent at nothing. Good night and good luck.
One, two, three, four, five, seven, six, eight, nine.
Stakes to make a world in which all of God's children can live or to go into the dark. We must either love each other or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
And that was the infamous Daisy or Peace Girl ad from LBJ from the 1964 presidential election. That video, that commercial, I actually found and swiped from PBS and posted it up to Google Video, and it's posted up on MediaMonarchy.blogspot.com. My name's James. You're listening to Media Monarchy here on the Portland Radio Authority. We're going to keep trucking along. And in an effort to underscore the fact that there is no difference between the two parties, our next story, Pelosi gives neocons get-out-of-jail card. This comes from the fantastic, prolific, great writer, blogger, Kurt Nemo. Once again, demonstrating there is essentially no difference between Democrats and Republicans, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi has told CBS 60 Minutes that the war criminal cabal deserves to escape justice. Wouldn't they just love it if we came in and our record as Democrats coming forth after 12 years is to talk about George Bush and Dick Cheney? This election is about them. This is a referendum on them. Making them lame ducks is good enough for me. According to Pelosi, prosecuting Bush and Cheney for torturing children, killing 650,000 Iraqis, and destroying the United States economy is, quote, off the table. Of course, this makes sense, as Democrats will continue killing Iraqis and deficit spending the nation into bankruptcy. Finally, making Bush and Cheney, that is to say the neocons, lame ducks will add a jolt of adrenaline to the neocon plan to decimate the Muslim and Arab Middle East, lest the neo-lib faction, under a Democrat president and Congress, go back to its old ways. That is, instead of mass murdering Iranians in one fell swoop, imposing the sort of sanctions levied against Iraq under Clinton, resulting in the slow death of 1.5 million Iraqis, 500,000 of them children. We can only hope when the day finally arrives, Nancy Pelosi will be paraded before the world in her stylish orange jumpsuit along with Bush, Cheney, and the other vile neocons. Now we're going to jump and listen to Nancy Pelosi on 60 Minutes.
She has pledged that as Speaker, she would give the Republicans rights they've denied the Democrats, like allowing them to introduce amendments to bills. But she may have trouble reining in the Democrats' appetite for revenge. There's already been talk of multiple investigations and impeachment of the president.
No, impeachment is off the table.
And that's a pledge.
Well, it's a pledge on the... Yes, I mean, it's a pledge. Of course it is. It is a waste of time.
So that's completely off the table.
Wouldn't they just love it if we came in and our record as Democrats coming forth in 12 years is to talk about George Bush and Dick Cheney? This election is about them. This is a referendum on them. Making them lame ducks is good enough for me.
Indeed. Tisk tisk. You're listening to Media Monarchy on the Portland Radio Authority. My name's James. We're going to keep trucking along in all the news that's fit to suppress. Our next story, ex-CIA and Marine Intel officer says 9/11 was an inside job. This story is coming from the great team at Infowars.com. An important story that broke over the weekend and may not have been widely picked up was that another former U.S. intelligence insider has turned whistleblower and concedes that the 9/11 attacks represented a, quote, neoconservative, neo-Nazi coup d'etat. In a review of Webster Tarpley's fantastic book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in the USA, for Amazon, Steele contends that the book is, quote, the strongest of the 770-plus books I have reviewed. Steele goes on to say, quote, I am forced to conclude that 9/11 was at a minimum allowed to happen as a pretext for war. See his review of Jim Bamford's Pretext for War. And I am forced to conclude that there is sufficient evidence to indict, not necessarily convict, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, and others of a neoconservative, neo-Nazi coup d'etat and kickoff of the clash of civilizations. See his review of Crossing the Rubicon as well as State of Denial. Most fascinatingly, the author links Samuel Huntington, author of Clash of Civilizations, with Leo Strauss, the connecting rod between the Nazi fascists and the neocons. Now, going back to the InfoWars report, Steele's biography is impressive. He was the second-ranking civilian in U.S. Marine Corps intelligence from 88 to 92. Steele is a former clandestine services case officer for the CIA. He is the founder and president of Open Source Solutions Incorporated and is acknowledged expert on computer and information vulnerabilities. Steele holds graduate degrees in international relations and public administration from Lehigh University and the University of Oklahoma. He's also earned certificates in intelligence policy from Harvard University and in defense studies from the Naval War College. This is another example of how far the 9/11 truth movement has come over the past year. Before the 2004 election, Steele advocated the re-election of George W. Bush. Given what he knows now, I don't think that would still be the case. Last month, we highlighted how Bill Christensen, a 28-year CIA career man, former naval intelligence officer, and the director of the CIA's Office of Regional and Political Analysis, had gone public to say 9/11 was an inside job. Along with 16-year CIA veteran Ray McGovern, this trio have a combined total of over 65 years of intelligence. It's safe to say they know a covert op when they see one. Over the past couple of years, we have seen a deluge of former government and intelligence agency insiders to go boldly public with their doubts about the official story behind 9/11. This is very encouraging and sets the precedent for future whistleblowers who might be considering the same course of action. Now we're going to jump to a fantastic interview between Alex Jones and Robert Steele. This was on GCNlive.com on the Alex Jones Show yesterday, October 26th. It's kind of a long interview, but it's definitely worth it. So I want you to stick with us. You're listening to Media Monarchy here on the Portland Radio Authority. My name's James. You can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com for this and tons of other news. Now, here's the interview between Alex Jones and Robert Steele.
And Robert David Steele is a former Marine Corps infantry and intelligence officer for 20 years and was a second-ranking civilian GS-14 in Marine Corps intelligence from 88 to 92. Steele is a former clandestine service case officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. He is the founder and CEO of OSS.net. We have a link to that on Infowars.com if you forgot it. And as well as the Golden Candle Society. Founded that. Steele also was a member of the adjunct faculty of Marine Corps University in the mid-1990s. And he is one of the biggest, or the biggest reviewer for Amazon.com of nonfiction books, over 700 books. And there have been a lot of reports written since he decided to valiantly go public. We had Bill Christensen, who was a over the entire foreign threat analysis group of the CIA, in the top 10 of the CIA for many years on, saying he cried over it. He couldn't believe it. It took him 2 years of research. And unfortunately, all evidence points towards, quote, total inside job. That's the only with the data he has in 2 years of research, it's the only one that fits. Sure, let it happen. We're involved a little. That fits, but not with all the other info. So it's horrifying. It's true. It's here. Robert David Steele has read a bunch of books on this subject. He's reviewed films. I'm going to send him Terror Storm. Hope he'll graciously review that. It's going to be on Amazon starting next week, and it's going to be in stores starting next week everywhere. But he joins us now, and I'm extremely honored to have him on with us. Thank you, sir.
Well, it's my pleasure, and as we were talking before, Amazon is really a very valuable place where people can read opinions that are almost as good as the books themselves. So you can search for the truth on Amazon.
Well, that's right. I mean, I catch myself some nights for an hour just on Amazon reading the reviews. Some of them are 10-page, you know, treatise, and it's and so much other. And then I found out about other books and other videos. It's great.
Well, they do have a 1,000-word limit, and I actually do count my words before I post it. But I try to write summative reviews, not just evaluative reviews. And I believe we're paying the price right now for our entire citizenry dropping out. We have let these guys just get away with murder for too long.
Now, you're a Republican. You're a highly respected conservative.
Well, I don't know if I'm highly respected and a conservative, but I'm certainly a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican.
Well, I did several days of research on you. I mean, I know that you've been cited and quoted a lot by the Republicans. And I mean, I've been a Republican, you know, going back 15 years ago. I stopped being one about 8 years ago, 9 years ago. But, I mean, my point is you're not some liberal with an axe to grind.
No, as a matter of fact, it was the Tarpley book that took me to a new place, if you will.
I have said on air, and I've read them all, folks, that that is the most sophisticated on basically what I the conclusions I had come to studying government-sponsored terror for 10 years and what I'd come to on 9/11. He put it all together in a way that I've tried to articulate on air, but you really can't do in a radio format. He gets it.
I agree with you, and I think what I would say is that I'm still not convinced, and I was just looking at the review that I did on Amazon. I'm still not convinced enough to convict, but I am most certainly convinced enough to say the U.S. government did not properly investigate this, and there are more rocks to be turned over.
Well, I can read your quotes here. They're actually pretty powerful. You're saying you believe that there should be a criminal investigation, and that there is enough to go after these people, and that once that opened up, that we would find quite a bit. Can you go over your awakening, your research, when you started looking into 9/11 and kind of the rundown?
Well, my first impression was the impression that they wanted us all to have. But where it really started breaking down for me was when I read about the not only the 11 countries that had given us warning prior to 9/11, but the 9/11 Commission did not speak to the general in charge of the watch of the National Intelligence Command Center. He avoided testimony. And then when I heard about the 100,000 from the Pakistani Intelligence Service to one of the hijackers right before 9/11, that really started a cascade of unexplained issues that Tarpley, I think, together with Crossing the Rubicon and several others, I've posted a list of books suitable for evaluating Dick Cheney. There's no question in my own mind but that Dick Cheney is the tar baby in this thing.
I agree. He is the nexus point, clearly with the PNAC documents, clearly 2 months before 9/11, taking the shoot-down powers for the first time in U.S. history away from the Pentagon, away from NORAD. You then have him in control that morning in the bunker saying the order still stands. It's 50 miles out. It's 30. It's 20. It's 10.
Right.
Of course, the order still stands. You heard anything to the contrary. Then you get into the CIA drills, the lies claiming that they never heard of such a plan. Clearly, foreign intelligence was picking up InfoPol 9 and Echelon feeds, picking up the back chatter. FBI that picked up the chatter tried to go bust. At least the patsies and the moles who were creating the legend and the story. We're being protected from the highest levels. Would you like to continue?
Well, I'm not sure I'm as far over as you are on the conspiracy theory. If I'm given a choice between incompetence and conspiracy with the U.S. government, I'll usually go with incompetence. But I am absolutely certain that WTC-7 was brought down with controlled demolitions. And that, as far as I'm concerned, means that this case has not been properly investigated.
And that was a spook hive.
Well, it was a government building. It was a federal government building, yes.
Would you call Defense Intelligence, FBI, CIA, the Army? I mean, it was a spook hive.
Well, Well, there's no way that building could have come down without controlled demolition.
And do you notice how they act suspicious and very secretive? Not one word in the 9/11 Commission about it. Five different reasons from FEMA and NIST for the collapse. Now they're saying they're having to look at explosions. I mean, clearly, why did they? Obviously, Al Qaeda couldn't sneak in there and plant bombs to bring it down with that perfect classical textbook job.
Well, I mean, you do have the whole issue of the security cameras being disengaged, the bomb sniffing dogs being removed, the family ties with Bush. You know, I mean, if you smell rotten fish, there's probably a rotten fish somewhere around.
Well, I mean, taking your skills, I mean, you were in the field with the Marine Corps. You did, you know, serious clandestine operations. I mean, you've got a snout for smelling rotten fish. But, I mean, we're in a giant, you know, bucket of rotten fish here. I mean, it's hard to come away with a conclusion. You think I want to believe this? I don't want to believe this. I'll lose sleep.
There I agree with you, and I frankly am stunned that I think the American public is just starting to wake up. But I have been stunned that the numerous discrepancies haven't made it onto CNN. Lou Dobbs is doing a very good job on broken government. In fact, I'm featuring a secessionist speaker from Vermont at my conference in January because I believe this is a republic and that the citizens can dissolve the government when it gets to a point of corruption and ineffectiveness so great as to warrant a new constitutional convention. I think our government is indeed broken.
Well, but from their view, it's not broken. We are seeing an imperium form of select global corporations that have bought off our government, and they're using dissolving us as not even an engine, but a fuel for an engine for global hegemon that I think we're later going to be basically broken up into the...
I think you're right. I take a very strong interest in what's called predatory immoral capitalism. And I would like to mention a book by Michael Lewis called Liar's Poker, which is basically an insider's look at how Wall Street gets into all of these investments early on, and then they leave the citizens holding the bag. And so, in my view, we have never had as much concentration of wealth among the fewest Americans in our history. And concentrated wealth is one of the things that leads to revolution.
Yeah, and the neocons will say, oh, you're against free market. This much of this has not been gained through free market. It's been gained through mafia triads working in unison to basically extract corporate welfare to fuel their expansion.
Well, one of the things, if you've read John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yes, we have, and interviewed him, yes.
And well, that's good. I don't think he worked for NSA, but I think there's enough meat to his story so that I buy 85% of it. And what I find really astonishing, and there's another book called The Global Class War. Basically, the American elite has conspired with other public elites. They've bribed other governments. And essentially, the American public is being ripped off at the same time that foreign publics are being ripped off.
Well, that's right. It's a mass looting. I mean, that's the CFR model.
Not only is it mass looting, but those foreigners blame us. I mean, they blame us, the people.
That's what I'm saying. We've been set up to take the fall later.
Yes.
Oh, you really? Oh, I tell you, you've got it. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in fact, I see Rupert Murdoch overseas attacking America. And meanwhile, he puts out domestic propaganda to keep us in line till it's too late, and they're just setting us up. It's a big scam.
Well, one of the reasons I just published a book, and I got to say, there's a really fantastic congressman in Connecticut. Congressman Rob Simmons is a moderate Republican. He's running for his fourth term. He's on the Homeland Security Committee, and he has agreed to sponsor the Smart Nation Act. And what I really want to do is create a public intelligence network that is of, by, and for the people.
Yes, using, that's what I, stay there.
Just using only legal, ethical information. But I absolutely believe now that the collective intelligence of the American people is superior to any orchestrated...
Stay there, we got a break. Stay there, sir, we got a break. We'll be right back. got him for the rest of the hour. We've got to get him back on as a routine guest, let him talk more about the book he just published. An amazing individual, high-level Marine Corps intelligence, then with the CIA. And we're honored to have Robert David Steele. In fact, he's never heard of me. I've never talked to him. And here he is talking about this organic intelligence network, the people, and how that interfaces with the Internet and how we're able to track the information and be so effective without the political blinders that are put on. Please continue, sir, and then I want to get into 9/11.
Well, I believe in the common sense of the American people. I believe that the American people have been dormant for too long, and they need to take their country back, not only from illegal immigration, but from corrupt Congress members and from extremists in the White House. The middle road is the best road, and I am concerned that we won't do enough house cleaning in this November election, and we're going to waste two more we're going to waste two more years. I will tell you, some of the experts that I've talked to and listened to basically say it's going to take 25 years to undo the damage that George Bush and Dick Cheney have done to this country. We have lost our moral standing in the world. We have lost more dead in the battlefields of Afghanistan and Iraq than were murdered on 9/11. And we have the bonus of 65,000 amputees whose lives have been ruined and a $2 trillion future debt for this war.
And they've salted the earth with DU, and Bush has signed H.R. 6166 that I've read, and the scholars agree, does affect citizens. He's buying billions in fake news and paying off reporters. I think they're going for broke. I mean, using your intelligence analyst skills, I mean, everything I see shows they're going for broke. I mean, even Bob Woodward says he may be going for dictatorship. They could start a war with Iran. They could stage more terror attacks. I mean, what do you think the probability of that is?
I am very concerned. And there's actually a book out called The End Game, in which General McInerney and another officer basically lay out the neocon plan. And you can find that book on Amazon. I don't particularly recommend buying it. But it is a very, very serious agenda for basically after Iraq, Iran, Syria, Egypt, Jordan. These guys are looking at nothing less than nuking them back into the Stone Age and keeping the oil. That's just nuts.
But the real target in all of this is also the West. During this psychological clash, like in 1984, but in the real world, Oceania, you know, being knocked back into the Stone Age liberty-wise.
I find it troubling. Iraq is never going to be a democracy like ours. And if they had a vote tomorrow, they would vote for a theocracy.
But the neocons said they never intended that. They just told the public that they meant to break it in three parts but basically go into each country and break it down and make sure they never develop.
Well, I don't know what they were thinking, but I will tell you that the same week that Cheney was meeting secretly with Exxon and Enron, Wired magazine published a very intelligent cover story on alternative energies and the price points at which they become affordable. Well, they all just became affordable.
Absolutely. So what do you see happening in the next 2 years?
I'm very troubled. I mean, I'm really worried. This is a wonderful country. You fly across this country and you see so much wide open space and stuff. But you know, I have on my website, OSS.net, I have the 10 threats. I have a public daily brief, and the 10 threats identified by the United Nations, which our federal government ignores, all but 8 and 9, proliferation and terrorism. And then there are 12 policies, and one of those policies is water. This country is running out of water. There are going to be water wars all over the world. We and the Comptroller General, who's a very serious man, David Walker, he's appointed for a 15-year position. He's been telling Congress over and over and over in the harshest possible terms that we're not budgeting for the future.
Well, I mean, sir, I look at LCRA here in Central Texas. They're grabbing up all the water to shut it off to artificially jack up prices.
Well, that shouldn't be allowed either, but I will tell you that we should be paying, and this may shock you, we should be paying as much for water as we're paying for gas now. It's just crazy. I mean, you know, an aquifer, once it runs out of water and salt water comes in, is gone for 10,000 years. We should be building, it costs $100 million to build water desalination plants. We should be putting two into California, two into Texas, two into Florida, and we should be pumping fresh distilled seawater converted into plain water back into the aquifers.
Yeah, no one's planning for the future. You're right. Stay there. Let's get back into 9/11 on the other side with our guest, an amazing individual, Robert Steele.
All right, we've been listening to Alex Jones interview Robert Steele about his review on Amazon of Webster Tarpley's fantastic book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in the USA. My name's James. You're listening to the first installment of Media Monarchy here on the Portland Radio Authority. You can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com for all this news and tons of videos, tons of links, all kinds of stuff there for you to kind of help you break out of the box of the phony left-right paradigm. We're going to jump on to our next story, also coming from the fantastic team at Infowars.com. Blair quizzed on Bilderberg. Tony Blair was questioned in the House of Commons on his involvement with the secretive Bilderberg group. Liberal Democrat MP Norman Baker asked Blair to provide a full answer to a previous 12th of October question about Bilderberg and whether Mr. Blair had had any involvement in Bilderberg conferences since he became prime minister in 1997. The entry into the House of Commons records is below and can be viewed online, and I've got the link to it right here. Prime Minister, Bilderberg Group, Norman Baker. To ask the Prime Minister, pursuant to the answer of October 12, 2006, official report column 862W on the Bilderberg Group, if he will provide the information requested in respect of himself since 1997. The Prime Minister, I have not attended any such meetings. Is Blair telling the truth? Certainly he has lied about previous attendances to Bilderberg meetings, most notably the 1993 conference which he attended before he'd even become leader of his own party. 1 year after his attendance, Blair became leader of the Labour Party and a rapid rise to power ensued, culminating in his election as Prime Minister in 1997, baffling many political analysts. In 1998, MP asked Blair the same question, to which he gave the same answer, that he had never attended a Bilderberg meeting. However, the evidence clearly shows he was there. A number of mainstream media reports plus the official Bilderberg attendee list confirm that Blair attended Bilderberg in Athens in 1993. Furthermore, parliamentary records prove he was there with long-term member and supposed opposition party stalwart Ken Clark. Tony Gosling at Bilderberg.org has tirelessly worked to expose the influence that the Bilderberg Group has on world events. Here, and that's a link, here he analyzes the incredible rise to power that other Western leaders have experienced after attending Bilderberg meetings. Norman Baker, the MP who questioned Blair, has recently made waves in British politics by launching into a private, year-long investigation into the death of Dr. David Kelly, the scientist who found himself under siege after apparently accusing the government of sexing up the case for war to a BBC journalist. Kelly, the UK's leading weapons inspector, was found dead under a tree on Harrowdown Hill in Ireland, as John Kerry's running mate in 2004. Further parliamentary records indicate that the shadow chancellor of the Exchequer attended the Bilderberg conference this year. This is interesting given that Gordon Brown, a man on the verge of becoming the next prime minister, attended the Bilderberg conference when he was shadow chancellor of the Exchequer in 1991. A House of Lords minute entry dated October 11th also indicates that an answer is awaited on whether any ministers attended this year's Bilderberg conference. The Lord Stoddard of Swindon. To ask Her Majesty's government whether any ministers attended the Bilderberg Conference in Ottawa between 8th and 11th June. If so, whether they attended in a ministerial or private capacity, whether they made contributions to debates, and if so, on what subjects. Seems that some members of the Houses want to know exactly who is attending Bilderberg meetings and in what capacity. Now, that story is on mediamonarchy.blogspot.com. Blair quizzed on Bilderberg. Now, we mentioned Dr. David Kelly being found dead on Harrowdown Hill. So now we're going to jump to Tom York with his song, Harrowdown Hill. Song Harrow Downhill, singing about the suicided Dr. David Kelly. My name's James. You're listening to Media Monarchy here on the Portland Radio Authority. We're going to keep on trucking with news and views that you can find on mediamonarchy.blogspot.com. U.S. in secret truce talks with insurgency chiefs. This is coming from the Times Online. American officials held talk some reality of these wars and wonder what the hell that they're doing. Something you may want to bring up is the use of DU and depleted uranium. So this next story, chemical warfare, from Reuters. Israel confirmed on Sunday it had used phosphorus shells, a controversial munition condemned by many human rights groups during its recent war against Hezbollah guerrillas in Lebanon. The International Red Cross and other human rights organizations have urged a world ban on the munitions, saying they cause chemical burns and lead to undue suffering. An Israeli military spokesman confirmed a report in Israel's left-leaning newspaper Haaretz that it had used phosphorus munitions in the 34-day offensive against Hezbollah, which ended in a UN-brokered ceasefire on August 14th. Quote, the army made use of phosphorus shells during the recent conflict with Hezbollah in Lebanon for the purpose of attacking military targets located in open areas, the Israeli military said in a statement. According to international law, the usage of phosphorus ammunition is permitted, and the army conforms to international regulations and standards. The Pentagon has acknowledged using incendiary white phosphorus munitions in a 2004 assault against insurgents in the Iraqi city of Fallujah. It says using them against enemy fighters is legal and not banned by any convention. Human Rights Watch has also accused Israel of using cluster bombs in populated areas of southern Lebanon during the war, which killed about 1,200 Lebanese and 157 Israelis. Hezbollah, which fired nearly 4,000 rockets into northern Ireland. Hezbollah, which fired nearly 4,000 rockets into northern Israel, was also accused by human rights groups of using cluster munitions, which are small bomblets that remain unexploded on the ground. Now, all these stories, and I can't even tell you as I'm reading them, all these stories that I'm reading to you have tons of links to tons of other news, lots of Google searches, so you can do some of the work yourself. Don't take what I'm saying to be the gospel. Put down the beer, put down the remote, figure out what's going on. Do the research for yourself. So now, appropriately enough, we're going to listen to warfare. You're listening to Media Monarchy on the Portland Radio Authority. Our next story coming off of MediaMonarchy.blogspot.com. Simpsons pitch tent in anti-war camp. This is coming from RadarOnline.com. Anyone who thinks Hollywood is run by a liberal cabal won't change his mind after watching The Simpsons' annual Halloween special. The episode, which airs November 5th, concludes with an Iraq War satire that may rank as the most pointed political statement the show has ever made. In the segment, aliens invade Springfield to prevent mankind from obtaining weapons of mass disintegration. But their mission, called Operation Enduring Occupation, turns into a quagmire. You said we would be greeted as liberators, accuses one alien. We were looking for an ending of the show, and it just kind of suggested itself, says Simpsons executive producer Al Jean. I'd like to take credit for being adventurous, but I think we're expressing a viewpoint 69% of the country agrees with. Perhaps, but in the background. Somehow those afraid to fight an illegal invasion decades ago are allowed to send soldiers to die for an illegal invasion they started. Somehow faking character, virtue, and strength is tolerated. Somehow profiting from tragedy and horror is tolerated. Somehow the death of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people is tolerated. Somehow the subversion of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is tolerated. Somehow suspension of habeas corpus is supposed to keep this country safe. Somehow torture is tolerated. Somehow lying is tolerated. Somehow reason is being discarded for faith, dogma, and nonsense. Somehow American leadership managed to create a more dangerous world. Somehow a narrative is more important than reality. Somehow America has become a country that projects everything that it is not and condemns everything that it is. Somehow the most reasonable, trusted, and respected country in the world has become one of the most irrational, belligerent, feared, and distrusted countries in the world. Somehow being politically informed, diligent, and skeptical has been replaced by apathy through active ignorance. Somehow the same incompetent, narcissistic, virtueless, vacuous, malicious criminals are still in charge of this country. Somehow this is tolerated. Somehow nobody is accountable for this. In a democracy, the policy of the leaders is the policy of the people. So don't be shocked when our grandkids bury much of this generation as traitors to the nation, to the world, and to humanity. Most likely, they will come to know that somehow was nurtured by fear, insecurity, and indifference, leaving the country vulnerable to unchecked, unchallenged parasites. Luckily, this country is still a democracy. People still have a choice. People still can take action. It can start after Pat's birthday. Now, that's written by Kevin Tillman, the brother of Pat Tillman, killed in Afghanistan. Our next story here on Media Monarchy, we heard Olbermann touch on a little while ago, remains found at WTC. This is coming from CNN. Human remains that appear to be from the World Trade Center victims were found by utility workers in a manhole at the northern edge of the site, a Port Authority official said. A Consolidated Edison crew doing excavation of the manhole at street level found the remains, some as big as arm or leg bones, said Steve Coleman, a spokesman for the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which owns the site. Con Ed said it entered the site to remove material from two manholes that had been damaged and abandoned after the 2001 collapse of the Twin Towers. Crews hauled the excavated materials to a work center more than a mile away, as is customary, Con Edison said. A contractor working for the Port Authority realized the materials contained remains, Con Edison spokesman Chris Olert said, and the medical examiner's office was contacted. 5 years after 2,749 people died in the September 11th World Trade Center attacks, families of about 1,150 victims still do not know whether their loved ones' remains were recovered. During the excavation of the 110-story Twin Towers, which began the evening of the attacks and lasted for 9 months, about 20,000 pieces of human remains were found. The DNA in thousands of those pieces, many small enough to slip into a test tube, was too damaged by heat, humidity, and time to yield matches in the many tests forensic scientists have tried over the years. The city told victims' families last year that it was putting the project of making identifications on hold, possibly for years, until new DNA technology was developed. Last Monday, the company contracted to work on the bone fragments said advances had been made and new identifications would be forthcoming. Besides the new remains by the utility workers, the lab has also recently received hundreds of bone fragments discovered on the roof of a building just south of where the Trade Center had stood. The building had been condemned since the attacks and was about to be torn down when workers found the bone pieces. Charles Wolf, whose wife Catherine's remains were never recovered, says he wants an independent party to take over the remains search. He showed up at the Con Ed site after being contacted by television stations Thursday. "We've got a problem right now," Wolf said. "Where else are we going to find them next?" You're listening to Media Monarchy here on the Portland Radio Authority. We got about 20 minutes left. I hope you stay with me. We're going to listen to Devendra Banhart. Got a few more news bits to get through. I'd like to try and play one more fantastic Keith Olbermann special comment if I can get to it. Right now, State Department's official misinformation. This story's coming from the Online Journal. The U.S. State Department's counter-misinformation office, headed by Todd Leventhal, is the subject of a nationally syndicated article originally published in the Hartford Courant and reprinted in major newspapers, including the San Francisco Chronicle. Leventhal and the Bush administration's Truth Ministry, the U.S. State Department identifying misinformation website, was previously exposed by Wayne Madsen as a shameless attack and cover-up apparatus. Madsen himself is the target of many of Leventhal's attacks. Since Madsen's 1995 expose, Leventhal's ministry has obviously remained busy. Among Leventhal's current targets, all of which he concludes, as an official asset of the U.S. government, are myths. 9/11 conspiracy theories, U.S. plans to invade Venezuela, U.S. creation of Osama bin Laden. Historians, investigators, journalists, researchers, and academics know full well that a great number of Leventhal's targeted items, notably the above, are not myths, urban legends, or conspiracy theories, but fact proven by official U.S. government documents and credible mainstream news reports. The site identifies what this administration considers threatening enough to debunk, i.e. cover up, deny, and discredit. It identifies groups and individuals that the government wishes to undermine. It's also no surprise that Leventhal's office has resorted to a familiar trick. Lump genuine facts and real history into one cesspool along with bad, genuinely crackpot material so that the important facts and real history are flushed down the pipe. Anything deemed to be damaging to the image of the U.S. government is fair game. This includes documented facts. The site goes out of its way, for instance, to label John Perkins' book Confessions of an Economic Hitman a work of fiction. The book details how Perkins sabotaged the economies of various nations while in the employ of the National Security Agency. Perkins responded to the State Department's website saying, "Their mission statement is a lie, so when they use their mission statement to say my book is a lie, I think it speaks for itself." The very existence of this truth ministry speaks volumes about what this country has become and how low this administration has stooped. Again, see the original expose by Wayne Madsen, and I got the link right there for you on Media Monarchy. The government has devoted an enormous apparatus, which includes the State Department, the CIA, a corporate media, a corrupted educational system, and more, to control what you think, openly manipulate reality, and cover up its malfeasance. Our next story is a quick one. This is nice. Publishers are so screwed. This is coming from Ad Jab. Ad revenue is down at both Tribune Company and New York Times. Ad revenue is down at the parent company of the Chicago Sun-Times. Ad revenue is down at Scripps and only up due to a technicality at McClatchy. I think this helps to underscore how important the exploding alternative media is and what we're a part of here at Portland Radio Authority. Next story, judge orders Cheney visitor logs open. This is coming from the AP Wire. A federal judge has ordered the Bush administration to release information about who visited Vice President Dick Cheney's office and personal residence, an order that could spark a late election season debate over lobbyist White House access. The Washington Post asked for 2 years of White House visitor logs in June, but the Secret Service refused to process the request. Government attorneys called it, quote, a fishing expedition into the most sensitive details of the vice presidency. U.S. District Judge Ricardo M. Urbina ruled Wednesday that by the end of next week, the Secret Service must produce the records or at least identify them and justify why they are being withheld. The newspaper sought logs for anyone visiting Cheney, his legal counsel, chief spokesman, and other top aides and advisors. The Secret Service had no comment on the ruling. In court documents, government attorneys said releasing the documents would infringe on Cheney's ability to seek advice. This case is about protecting the effective functioning of the vice presidency under the Constitution, attorneys wrote. A lawsuit over similar records revealed last month that Republican activists Grover Norquist and Ralph Reed, key figures in the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal, landed more than 100 meetings inside the Bush White House. The Post cited those records, which were released to the Democratic Party and Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, as evidence that the documents should be released. Now again, like all these stories, there's tons of links. Everything is cited, and you can look it up for yourself. All right, I got here. That's what I wanted to get to. Olbermann, your words are lies, sir. Keith Olbermann's been calling it like it is. His special comments are indeed special because no other talking head outside of Jack Cafferty is willing to step up to the plate and say what needs to be said on the 24/7 mainstream media cycle. Your words are lies, sir. They are lies that imperil us all. And that sounds about right. So let's listen to this powerful special comment from Keith Olbermann.
We have lived as if in a trance. We have lived as people in fear. And now, our rights and our freedoms in peril, we slowly awaken to learn that we have been afraid of the wrong thing. Therefore, tonight have we truly become the inheritors of our American legacy. For on this first full day that the Military Commissions Act is in force, we now face what our ancestors faced at other times of exaggerated crisis and melodramatic fear-mongering, a government more dangerous to our liberty than is the enemy it claims to protect us from. We have been here before, and we have been here before led here by men better and wiser and nobler than George W. Bush. We have been here when President John Adams insisted that the Alien and Sedition Acts were necessary to save American lives, only to watch him use those acts to jail newspaper editors, American newspaper editors, in American jails for things they wrote about America. We have been here when President Woodrow Wilson insisted that the Espionage Act was necessary to save American lives, only to watch him use that act to prosecute 2,000 Americans, especially those he disparaged as hyphenated Americans, most of whom were guilty only of advocating peace in a time of war. American public speakers in American jails for things they said about America. And we have been here when President Franklin D. Roosevelt insisted that Executive Order 9066 was necessary to save American lives, only to watch him use that order to imprison and pauperize 110,000 Americans, while his man in charge, General DeWitt, told Congress, "It makes no difference whether he is an American citizen, he is still a Japanese. American citizens in American camps for something they neither wrote nor said nor did, but for the choices they or their ancestors had made about coming to America." Each of these actions was undertaken for the most vital, the most urgent, the most inescapable of reasons. And each was a betrayal of that for which the president who advocated them claimed to be fighting. Adams and his party were swept from office and the Alien and Sedition Acts erased. Many of the very people Wilson silenced survived him, and one of them even ran to succeed him and got 900,000 votes, though his presidential campaign was conducted entirely from his jail cell. And Roosevelt's internment of the Japanese was not merely the worst blight on his record, but 4 decades later, it would necessitate a formal apology from the government of the United States to the citizens of the United States whose lives it ruined. The most vital, the most urgent, the most inescapable of reasons. In times of fright, we have been only human. We have let Roosevelt's fear of fear itself overtake us. We have listened to the little voice inside that has said, "The wolf is at the door. This will be temporary. This will be precise. This too shall pass." We have accepted that the only way to stop the terrorists is to let the government become just a little bit like the terrorists. Just the way we once accepted that the only way to stop the Soviets was to let the government become just a little bit like the Soviets. Or substitute the Japanese, or the Germans, or the socialists, or the anarchists, or the immigrants, or the British, or the aliens. The most vital, the most urgent, the most inescapable of reasons. And always, always wrong. With the distance of history, the questions will be narrowed and few. Did this generation of Americans take the threat seriously, and did we do what it takes to defeat that threat? Wise words, and ironic ones, Mr. Bush, your own, of course, yesterday in signing the Military Commissions Act. You spoke so much more than you know, sir. Sadly, of course, the distance of history will recognize that the threat this generation of Americans needed to take seriously was you. We have a long and painful history of ignoring the prophecy attributed to Benjamin Franklin that those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. But even within this history, we have never before codified the poisoning of habeas corpus, that wellspring of protection from which all essential liberties flow. You, sir, have now befouled that spring. You, sir, have now given us chaos and called it order. You, sir, have now imposed subjugation and called it freedom for the most vital, the most urgent, the most inescapable of reasons. And again, Mr. Bush, all of them wrong. We have handed a blank check drawn against our own freedom to a man who has said it is unacceptable to compare anything this country has ever done to anything the terrorists have ever done. We have handed a blank check drawn against our own freedom to a man who has insisted again that the United States does not torture. It's against our laws and it's against our values. And who has said that with a straight face while the pictures from Abu Ghraib prison and the stories of waterboarding figuratively fade in and out around him. We have handed a blank check drawn against our own freedom to a man who may now, if he so decides, declare not merely any non-American citizens unlawful enemy combatants and ship them somewhere, anywhere, but may now, if he so decides, declare you an unlawful enemy combatant and ship you somewhere, anywhere. And if you think this hyperbole or hysteria, ask the newspaper editors when John Adams was president, or the pacifists when Woodrow Wilson was president, or the Japanese at Manzanar when Franklin Roosevelt was president. And if you somehow think habeas corpus has not been suspended for American citizens, but only for everybody else, ask yourself this. If you are pulled off the street tomorrow and they call you an alien or an undocumented immigrant or an unlawful enemy combatant, exactly how are you going to convince them to give you a court hearing to prove you are not? Do you think this attorney general is going to help you? This president now has his blank check. He lied to get it. He lied as he received it. Is there any reason to even hope that he has not lied about how he intends to use it, nor who he intends to use it against? These military commissions will provide a fair trial, you told us yesterday, Mr. Bush, in which the accused are presumed innocent, have access to an attorney, and can hear all the evidence against them. Presumed innocent, Mr. Bush. The very piece of paper you signed as you said that allows for detainees to be abused up to the point just before they sustain serious mental and physical trauma in the hope of getting them to incriminate themselves. And they may no longer even invoke the Geneva Conventions in their own defense. Access to an attorney, Mr. Bush? Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift said on this program, sir, and to the Supreme Court, that he was only granted access to his detainee defendant on the promise that the detainee would plead guilty. Hearing all the evidence, Mr. Bush, the Military Commissions Act specifically permits the introduction of classified evidence not made available to the defense. Your words are lies, sir. They are lies that imperil us all. One of the terrorists believed to have planned the 9/11 attacks, you told us yesterday, said he hoped the attacks would be the beginning of the end of America. That terrorist, sir, could only hope. Not his actions nor the actions of a ceaseless line of terrorists, real or imagined, could measure up to what you have wrought. Habeas corpus, gone. The Geneva Conventions, optional. The moral force we shined outwards to the world as an eternal beacon, and inwards at ourselves as an eternal protection, snuffed out. These things you have done, Mr. Bush, they would constitute the beginning of the end of America. And did it ever occur to you once, sir, somewhere in amidst your eight separate, gruesome, intentional, terroristic invocations yesterday of the horrors of 9/11, that with only a little further shift in this world we now know, just a touch more repudiation of all of that for which our patriots have died, did it ever occur to you once that in just 27 months and 2 days from now, when you leave office, some irresponsible future president and a competent tribunal of his lackeys would be entitled by the actions of your own hand to declare the status of unlawful enemy combatant 4 and convene a military commission to try not John Walker Lind, but George Walker Bush for the most vital, the most urgent, the most inescapable of reasons. And doubtless, sir, all of them, as always, wrong.
Another fantastic special comment from Keith Olbermann on his show Countdown on MSNBC. I think that's going to about do it for this maiden voyage of Media Monarchy. Now, once again, I keep hammering it in. You can go to mediamonarchy.blogspot.com for all these stories and tons more. Now, I'm not pimping the website for any kind of personal gain. There's no ads. I don't get any money. None of this is for money. This is for you to get informed. Stop being so naive. I hope that each week I can help you and help myself become more informed on all these things going on. So once again, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the Portland Radio Authority for letting me do this. And I'm going to be here every Friday from 10 to noon with Media Monarchy. My name's James, saying thanks and take care.
with the diary, or whether he did not along with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.